This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
People in the southwestern Iranian city of Izeh hold a funeral for the victims of Wednesday's terror attack there. Inflation in Japan hits a four-decade high in October, fueled by high energy costs and a weak yen. And South Korea says the North has fired a ballistic missile, which could be an ICBM. Just a day after Pyongyang launched another missile. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. People in the southwestern Iranian city of Izeh have held a funeral for the victims of the Wednesday terror attack there. Mourners expressed their grief for the victims, while at the same time slamming those behind the deadly assault. Two gunmen shot at people in the central city of Izeh, Khuzestan province. Seven people, including a child, lost their lives as a result. 10 more were injured. Also last month, a terror attack took place at a revered shrine in Iran's southwestern city of Shiraz, leaving over a dozen people dead. The assaults come on the heels of recent riots in Iran. Tehran says terrorists have taken advantage of the wave of unrest and rioting, which were hatched and staged by foreign-backed elements. University professor Mohammad Marandi says foreign governments have used their agents inside Iran to ruthlessly murder innocent people and to put the blame on Iranian government.
Over the last 2-3 days, we've seen an upsurge in the number of police officers and Basij members massacred by these thugs in Esfahan, in Mashhad, in Bukhan, and of course in Izeh. Now, what is unique about Izeh is that now these thugs that have murdered these innocent people and injured police officers, they are, alongside the Persian media based in London and Western countries, trying to blame the government for these murders. And it's clear who benefits from these acts. It's obvious which countries benefit from the death of innocent people in Iran. I think the government has to start changing its policy. And those governments that are behind this, those Western governments and those regional governments that are behind this, have to pay a heavy price. This is the continuation of these policies where the police are left vulnerable, the Basij are left vulnerable, is unacceptable. Western countries, their agents will kill ordinary people and then blame the police.
For weeks, Iran has witnessed unrest and riots in its different cities. The unrest started after a young woman named Mahsa Amini fainted in police custody and later died in hospital. The protests were initially peaceful, but violent elements supported by Western spy agencies hijacked the protests and turned into violent riots. The unrest has provided the fertile ground for Western governments and spy agencies to launch a media warfare on Iran and create anti-Iran fake news. A recent notorious case in point is the recent tweet by Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. In the controversial tweet, the Canadian Premier had claimed that Iran has sentenced 15,000 protesters to death. The false claim, which has been part of the media campaign against Iran, has been circulating on social media in recent days. The inaccurate tweet was live on Trudeau's official Twitter account for almost 12 hours before it was deleted. Several Western celebrities and news outlets, including the Newsweek, also shared the erroneous information. This is not the only case of false news propagated against Iran. When the protests first started in Iran, Western-backed propaganda outlets claimed that Mahsa Amini was beaten to death by Iranian police forces. Following an elaborate investigation, that claim also proved to be false. It's now become a common practice for these propaganda machines to publish unverified footages on protests in Iran.
Western-sponsored media outlets and social media platforms have turned into a battleground of anti-Iran narratives and fake news. The online campaign is fed by fake accounts used by members of the anti-Iran groups, such as the terrorist Mujahideen Khalq organization. Add to that the Saudi-funded Iran International TV network based in London and profoundly active in propagating against the Islamic Republic.
Back in September 2022, U.S. media outlets ran a controversial report. The report was widely discussed and celebrated in anti-Iran outlets. But it turned out to be a fake report after Ayatollah Khamenei publicly attended a military ceremony in Tehran in October. The false report was propagated by Western outlets as Iran was battling the Western-backed riots. Social media platforms have also turned into a battleground of narratives against Iran. Analysis shows those tweeting the hashtags associated with the unrest showed a striking number of new accounts created since the protests started.
In August 2011, when there were riots in London because someone was shot and killed by the police, a number of people were killed. I don't recall the exact number. But big tech, Facebook, back then BlackBerry, and Twitter cooperated with the British government. In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I've lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments, even though in the riots in London, people were killed, and they arrested people and put them in jail for inciting riots. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
The online anti-Iran campaign is fed by fake accounts used by members of the anti-Iran Mujahideen Khalq organization terrorist cult who are stationed in Albania and so-called journalists employed by the Saudi-funded London-based Iran International TV, which is now on Tehran's terror blacklist. The television channel has openly been promoting monarchists, the highly notorious MKO terror group, and most significantly, separatist terrorists. A particular case in point is a project by Western media outlets to accuse the government of killing its own citizens. They have produced a long list of citizens which they claim have been killed by security forces.
Tehran has condemned an anti-Iran IAEA resolution saying it is, quote, unacceptable, politically motivated and unconstructive. Iran's envoy to the International Atomic Energy Agency, Mohsen Nazeri Asla, said the move may, quote, affect cooperation with the IAEA and pave the way for more unilateral sanctions against the Islamic Republic. He said Western sponsors of the resolution put heavy pressure on the other members of the IAEA's Board of Governors to get the motion approved. The Iranian envoy urged the UN nuclear agency to adopt an independent, impartial, and professional approach. The motion submitted by the United States, Britain, France, and Germany calls on Iran to fully cooperate with the agency. The resolution is associated with an IAEA probe into what it terms the presence of, quote, uranium traces at three undeclared sites in Iran. Soaring prices in Japan have hit the wallets of consumers as inflation peaks its highest level in nearly four decades. Core consumer prices, excluding fresh food, increased by 3.6% in October compared to a year ago. That is according to data by the Japanese government. High prices of energy and raw materials, as well as a weak national currency, are to blame for the high inflation. Chief Cabinet Secretary says that it has taken a toll on the people's basic needs. Japan's central bank is resisting tilting to a tightening monetary policy. It says that there's no need to raise interest rates, a move that some experts believe would help stave off inflation. In recent months, some central banks, like the U.S. Federal Reserve, have raised interest rates to contain inflation. South Korea says the neighboring North has made its second weapons launch in 2 days, firing a suspected intercontinental ballistic missile towards the Sea of Japan. According to the South Korean military, the latest missile flew 1,000 kilometers and reached an altitude of almost 6,100. On Thursday, North Korea tested a short-range ballistic missile as well. The National Security Council in Seoul has already met to discuss the latest developments. Japan has also confirmed the latest launch, saying that the missile fell in the waters in its exclusive economic zone. Tokyo says that it was probably an ICBM that can reach U.S. mainland.
We analyzed the flight trajectory of the ICBM-class missile that was launched this time, and depending on the warhead and weight of the missile, it had a flying capability of over 15,000 kilometers, which means it had enough range to reach United States mainland.
The U.S. has strongly condemned North Korea's missile test, calling it a brazen violation of U.N. Security Council resolutions. Russia, in the meantime, has accused the U.S. of testing North Korea's patience. Pyongyang has fired a barrage of missiles in recent months in response to what it describes as U.S. hostilities. The North says its missile program is for self-defense. The country is strongly critical of joint military drills frequently held by Washington and Seoul. The latest such drills took place earlier this month. Pyongyang says they are a rehearsal for an invasion. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says over 10 million Ukrainians are without electricity following a wave of Russian strikes targeting the country's energy infrastructure. Zelensky slammed Russia's fresh rocket and missile strikes as, quote, another terrorist attack. The Ukrainian president was speaking via video link at an economy forum in Singapore. He said Moscow is waging a war on Ukraine's electricity by blowing up critical energy facilities. On Thursday, a barrage of Russian missiles hit several Ukrainian cities, including the capital, Kiev. Damage to Ukraine's electricity infrastructure has been so extensive that authorities have imposed power cuts to relieve the power grid. Russia has launched massive airstrikes on Ukraine's major cities since early October, mainly targeting energy networks. The UK government has unveiled an emergency budget. It includes tens of billions of dollars in spending cuts and tax increases as the government seeks to restore its economic credibility and patch up the nation's battered finances. Said Purza reports.
Transfixed, ordinary Britons stand glued to their screens, waiting for the news to sink in. After weeks of will he not, the UK's new chancellor has announced his economic plan for the country. Except for a couple of surprise rabbits out of the hat, such as a bit of more spending in the health and education sectors, it was what everyone had expected. tax hikes and spending cuts aimed at plugging a nearly $65 billion hole in public finances created by the previous conservative government only 2 months ago. Pretty soon, millions of Britons will be paying more taxes. A freeze on the non-taxable part of their income will mean millions will be dragged into higher tax brackets, and the cap on energy bills introduced by the previous government will be scaled back as of April next year. As if that wasn't enough, Britons are going to see public sector spending cuts to the tune of $30 billion. All this as the country grapples with double-digit inflation, rising energy costs, and a prolonged recession, none of which was lost on the opposition.
What does this mean? Family holidays cancelled, savings depleted, hopes for the future replaced by sleepless nights. And all of this on top of the fact that the average worker is earning less today than when the Tories came to power 12 years ago. The government has presided over the biggest wage squeeze in centuries. This was a crisis made in Downing Street, and it is ordinary working people who are paying the price.
As ever, the Chancellor, as did the PM before him, blamed Britain's economic woes on the pandemic and external factors such as the war in Ukraine. But many experts say that's not all.
There are international factors. However, Britain has managed to achieve something on its own for one or two areas, such as the impact of Brexit. Whereas with when they were in the EU, they had access to the world's largest free trade area. Britain deliberately took itself out of that and hasn't been able to replace it with anything. So that's had extra cost to it. And so there's also been less confidence in Britain because it's outside that. Why should I be investing? And so if it's not seen to be as really secure and full of confidence, then investors will go elsewhere. And that's what we've been seeing.
Despite the government saying its measures announced today are necessary for balancing the books, there is no doubt that they will have real consequences for millions of Britons for years to come. Saipur is up, London.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today we complete the explanation of Surah Hashr, which was revealed in Medina and is number 59 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. The word Hashr in this surah does not denote the gathering on the day of resurrection, but it connotes people's gathering for migration and refers to the abject fate and defeat of the joint stratagems against Islam and Muslims of the Arab hypocrites and the rebellious Israelites who breached their agreement with the Prophet. We start from where we left you last Friday, and here are ayahs 18 and 19.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله ولتنظر نفس ما قدمت لغد واتقوا الله إن الله خبير بما تعملون ولا تكونوا كالذين نسوا الله فأنساهم أنفسهم أُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْفَاسِقُونَ
O you who have faith, be wary of Allah, and let every soul consider what he sends ahead for tomorrow, and be wary of Allah. Indeed, Allah is aware of what you do. And do not be like those who forgot Allah, and he made them forget themselves. It is they who are the transgressors. If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last Friday, we said hypocrisy makes a person devilish to the extent that he or she embarks on deceiving others and trying in vain to escape the misery in which they have trapped themselves. But there is escape for the Satan and his followers, who will be cast into the fires of hell and remain there forever for the breaking of promises and tempting simple-minded people to commit sins. The ayahs that we recited to you now advises Muslims to reflect on the fate of the ever-rebellious Israelites and also on the fate of the hypocrites who pretend to be Muslims, since it is proper cognition of the Almighty Creator and awe of His Majesty that makes a person better aware of afterlife and the provisions to be prepared for it, keeping in mind that Allah is aware of each and everything. Ayah 19 means to say that those who are negligent of the omnipresence of the Almighty Creator, He will make them forget their own selves, and they end up as transgressors. In other words, forgetting God Almighty leads a person to indulge in carnal desires and pleasures of the flesh, in violation of humanitarian values, and oblivious of the goal of creation and the certainty of the day of resurrection for the final judgment. One of the worst afflictions of a person is to forget his or her own self, which means forgetting the God-given inherent faculties that distinguish human beings from other creatures. Thus, it is full awareness of the divine laws, which create self-control, respect for the rights of others, and the doing of good, while preventing us from committing sin. These ayahs teach us that, number one, faith is based upon proper cognition of God in order to abstain from sins. Number two, we should think of our fate on Judgment Day and make due provisions. And number three, one who forgets God forgets the goal of creation and purpose of life, thereby ending up as transgressor of humanitarian values. We now invite you to listen to Ayah 20 of Surah Hashr.
لا يستوي أصحاب النار وأصحاب الجنة أصحاب الجنة هم الفائزون.
Not equal are the inmates of the fire and the inhabitants of paradise. It is the inhabitants of paradise who are the successful ones. Here is a comparison which is made between two groups, that is, the God-fearing believers who are cognizant of the source of creation and the resurrection day, and the heedless ones who are oblivious of the omnipresence of the Almighty Creator and thus become forgetful of their own selves by indulging in sins and trampling humanitarian values. The disbelievers and unrepentant sinners end up in the fires of hell as a consequence of their evil deeds, while the true believers who obeyed God are rewarded the bliss of paradise for their success. From this ayah we'll learn that, number one, physical death is not the end of life to justify the insatiable quest for worldly gains that might end up in the inferno. The transient life of the mortal world is actually the field for sowing the seeds of good deeds in order to reap benefits in afterlife with the reward of the bliss of paradise. And number two, there is no third way other than truth and falsehood, which means human beings will either enter paradise or fall in hell. Is Ayah 21 of the same surah.
لو أنزلنا هذا القرآن على جبل لرأيته خاشعا متصدعا من خشية الله وتلك الأمثال نضربها للناس لعلهم يتفكرون.
Had we sent down this Quran upon a mountain, you would have surely seen it humbled and gone to pieces with the fear of Allah. We draw such examples for mankind so that they may reflect. One of the educational methods of the Noble Quran is to give examples and draw comparisons. Here it speaks of the great impact of the revelation of the divine words of the final heavenly scripture that was God entrusted to the last and greatest messenger with the universal message of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The ayah says that proper reflection on the contents of the Noble Quran reveals that its words are so penetrating that had they been sent down upon a mountain possessing intellect and perception, it would have trembled and broken into pieces. It is thus a matter of surprise that the negligent persons have become so stone-hearted because of the sins they commit that the recitation of the ayahs of the Noble Quran has no effect upon them because they do not reflect upon the contents of the heavenly scripture to acquire awe and proper cognizance of the Almighty Creator. This ayah teaches us the following points. Number one, at times, The Noble Quran applies indirect methods through similitudes to draw comparison in order to impact the audience. Number two, the hearts of the disbelievers and sinners become harder than stones. And number three, failure to reflect upon divine words is to drift away from truth. Now we conclude the explanation of Surah Hashr with the recitation of Ayahs 22, 23, and 24.
هو الله الذي لا إله إلا هو عالم الغيب والشهادة هو الرحمن الرحيم هو الله الذي لا إله إلا هو الملك القدوس السلام المؤمن المهيمن العزيز الجبار المتكبر سبحان الله عما يشركون هو الله الخالق البارئ المصور له الأسماء الحسنى يسبح له ما في السماوات والأرض وهو العزيز الحكيم
He is Allah. There is no God except Him. No heir of the unseen and the seen. He is the all-beneficent, the all-merciful. He is Allah, there is no God except Him, the sovereign, the all-holy, the all-benign, the securer, the all-conserver, the almighty, the all-compeller, the all-magnanimous. Glorified be Allah from any partners that they may ascribe to Him. He is Allah, the Creator, the Maker, the Granter of forms and color. His are the most excellent names. Whatever there is in the heavens and in the earth, glorify Him, and He is the Almighty, the All-Wise. The reference here is to some of the attributes of the Almighty Creator, whose chosen name is Allah, with which all the three ayahs begin, followed by 15 of His attributes, with His oneness being the first and foremost. He is fully aware of all things, whether visible or unseen. His mercy is all-encompassing, and He is the most beneficent. His sovereignty rules over the entire universe. He is the holy, the benign, the impeccable, the wise, and the just who never wrongs anyone and guarantees security to all. He is the omnipotent, the omniscient, with power over all and everything. He is the granter of the various forms, shapes, sizes, and colors that abound in the universe. His are the most excellent names, and He is magnanimous and far glorious to have any partner. These ayahs teach us that, number one, God's awareness and mercy have no limits and encompass everything. Number two, the one and only creator of the universe is also its absolute ruler. Number three, He is free of any shortcoming or flaw, and whatever He bestows are favors and security. And number four, only Allah deserves glory. Sanctified is He with the most excellent attributes and wise, impeccable, and absolutely perfect is He. Well, dear listeners, on this note, we come to the end of Surah Hashr. And inshallah, we will start explanation of Surah Mumtahine next week. God bless you and goodbye until then.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
North Korea has been on a missile launch run lately. In one day, it tested fire 25 missiles. Why has North Korea been so aggressive when it comes to these launches? Is it to grab attention from the U.S.? Yet when it comes to North Korea, the U.S. President Joe Biden says the U.S., Japan, and South Korea are more aligned than ever on North Korea. Shouldn't they try to be more aligned with North Korea itself instead of among themselves, or at least with China? Just a few of the questions we'll be asking from our guests in this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guests. Mike Billington is the editor at the Executive Intelligence Review, joins us from Hamilton, Virginia. Also joining us is Arnold August. He's an author and journalist who joins us from Montreal.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, welcome to you both, gentlemen. Mike Billington, I'll start with you. The amount of missiles that North Korea has launched is, in a sense, incredible. And one day, 25 missile tests were conducted. Why do you think that they feel that they have to launch so many missiles? What are they trying to say here?
Well, the obvious is that they're trying to demonstrate that they have the capacity to defend themselves and that they're willing to do so by attacking any source of attack from outside their borders. There may very well be other justifications which they have not made public.
Okay. Arnold August, let me ask you, in terms of the way that they have done this, analysts are saying that this is perhaps building to something bigger, like maybe a nuclear test, which the U.S. is anticipating, or a full long-range ballistic missile test out to be conducted to the Pacific, or both. Do you think that that is what North Korea is intending to do?
I think one has to look at North Korea, similar to what Mike just mentioned, from their own point of view, their own standpoint. It is quite obvious for some time, I would say, since the last meeting of the big powers in Madrid, NATO, last June, for the first time, NATO and the West specifically mentioned that, yes, we're concerned about Russia, but our main fear is is China. And then, of course, you had the very well orchestrated and deliberate sending by the Biden administration, Nancy Pelosi, to Taiwan. And since then, it's been escalating. Now, in that context, I think that North Korea has every right to have nuclear weapons to defend themselves. One could just imagine if they did not have these weapons to defend themselves against the United States, it's quite possible that North Korea would have been overthrown by this time. Let us take the example, if I'm not mistaken, Gaddafi, he gave up on the issue of nuclear weapons. What happened after that? The United States invaded the country, killed the legitimate leader of that country in Libya, and it's been going downhill since. So I think people are perhaps have to learn from history and put things into context and not allow the mainstream media to focus, North Korea, they're bad. They tested missiles, but what is the context?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you can tell us, Mike Billensing, whether these missile tests, along with the military exercises that the U.S. has conducted, whether it's with South Korea or with Japan, and also how it has been provoking China, such as providing, for example, Taiwan with arms, is all related, in a sense, to the way that North Korea has exercised these vast numbers of missile tests. I mean, are these things related?
Well, you know, everything is related in terms of the development of human history. The current global showdown, the global crisis being orchestrated virtually every day over many different aspects of the unfolding of history, the evolution of what has become a very near-term degeneration into global nuclear war centered around the Ukraine crisis. All these things are related. I think you really have to step back from the strategic nuclear confrontation, military threats, and so forth. It's required that you look at the global emergence of history as a from a single perspective in order to have a sense of what is going on in front of our eyes and what is rapidly escalating crisis situation that could become a war virtually overnight by intent or by mistake. That's the point of initiation of looking at this descent to a nuclear war. But on the other hand, you also have to have a broader perspective and recognizing that the Western financial system is disintegrating. We're sitting on top of the greatest explosion of the dollar-based Western financial system in history. And it's this that's driving the war rather than the other way around. The feeble and ridiculous effort by some of the Western financial moguls to say that the current Western financial disintegration is being brought about by Russia's taking its oil and, and gas off the markets is totally absurd. First of all, it's not Russia that took its oil and gas off the markets, but it also is trying to separate the energy crisis and the general economic breakdown crisis in the West from from its reality, which is 30, 40 years of crazy speculative printing of money, dollars and other currencies.
Let's take a look at what Russia has said, actually, since you've mentioned Russia over here. Arnold August, Russian foreign minister, has said that the U.S. and NATO are militarizing the Southeast Asia region in order to contain the interests of Russia and China in the Asia-Pacific. Now, I'm looking at that statement coming from the Russian foreign minister, and I'm asking you to whether you can put that into context for us when it comes to the way that actually the U.S., has said that both Russia and China can exercise their influence on North Korea. You know, you have the U.S. on the one hand that obviously is not on good terms with Russia, nor with China, really, in a sense, accusing them of a variety and host of issues, but yet they want to ask them to leverage their influence over North Korea. I mean, isn't that like having the cake and eat it too type approach by the U.S.?
Yes, it is. And I'd like to just add to that one point. Mike also said the necessity to look at the overall context and to dot the lines, dot the I's. So I would say, you know, we're looking at what region? It's the South China Sea. What is the key country in the South China Sea? There's only one, the People's Republic of China. And so, in my view, if you want to look into the context, the current offensive by the United States and its allies, including Canada and Europe, began, say, in 2014 in Russia when NATO launched its offensive to push Russia to the brink, where it had no choice to defend itself against NATO incursions right on the border of Russia. And I have said that before, and I'll say it again, while it is obvious the main target of NATO and Western countries is Russia, but the ultimate goal of these countries is to weaken Russia, not just as a phenomenon as such, but as part of the growing alliance between Russia and China, which also includes many other countries, such as BRICS, which is exploding. Every time we have an interview here on Press TV, we talk about the number of countries that are joining BRICS. Well, since the last conference here, there's been several other countries joining. So my view is that everything that's happening, whether it's in Eastern Europe or in the South China Sea, the main target is China. And I would not say just to contain China, as the United States puts it diplomatically, but the United States is not interested in containing anything. Right from this very beginning, the United States wants to control completely the countries of the world that they want to dominate, and those countries that stand up to U.S. domination, whether the United States admits it or not, the ultimate goal is regime change. That, their goal in Russia is regime change. They want to get Putin out in order to have a government that is compliant with the United States. And the same thing goes, it's hard for them to talk about regime change and China, forget about it, but they're going to try everything to destabilize China and make it difficult for it to continue on the path of major economic developments that the whole world can now see.
Well, the U.S. is benefiting from this, though, in some sense, Mike Billington, if you agree. I mean, at this point, you had this massive war games that the U.S. conducted with Japan. Japan is now intimidated, and next month, it has announced that the government is going to double the defense budget over the next decade, and it's going to acquire long-range strike weapons. And, of course, that's going to come from the U.S. Do you think that that is obviously one intention the U.S. has when it comes to North Korea vis-a-vis militarizing that region?
Yes, I think the answer is yes. The Western financial system is in a state of total bankruptcy, which is increasingly recognized around the world, and that there's no easy fix, no solution to the bankruptcy. And therefore, many in the West, the so-called war party, which includes people from all the political parties in the U.S., both the Republicans and Democrats, who believe that pushing for war is the only way to start the money pumping for the military-industrial complex, as well as the interplay between the national financial institutions in Europe, in the U.S., in developing sector, the South American banking interests, the African financial institutions, and so forth. So in that sense, yes, the diverting of funds to the money trading centers in the financial institutions, the hedge funds, and the other aspects of this, but in particular those that are tied to financing this war, which is, you know, demanding the printing of billions and billions, trillions even, of new credit being pumped out into the system. This is all interfaced. The Wall Street financier crowd and those who are making sure politically as well as financially that new credits are being issued regularly to finance the military industrial complex. All of that is being waged full steam.
Okay. All right. So, while Mike Billington was speaking there, Arnold August, I couldn't help but try to draw a comparison here, which I don't know if it's appropriate or not. So I'm going to ask you, when you take a look at the way that the U.S. is militarizing the region, we're looking at obviously some of the countries in particular like South Korea and Japan. It kind of looks like what it's doing in the area where Ukraine is. You know, you have all these NATO countries, and they're all being pumped with lots of weapons, with the threat being Russia. And here you have the threat being North Korea, and they seem to be ramping up that kind of approach. And interestingly, reports are suggesting that Japan is negotiating the purchase of these Tomahawk cruise missiles, which has the ability to strike targets deep inside China. So that seems to be in line with what they're doing in the Ukraine area. Is that an appropriate comparison?
I think it's more than appropriate, because what we're seeing now over the last few weeks, few days, is a NATO-style aggression led by the United States and their allies such as Canada and Europe against China. There's no doubt about it. With Taiwan, I guess one could say the proxy in this case is Taiwan, as Ukraine is the proxy against Russia in Eastern Europe. And I think it's important to analyze the fact that it was raised by Mike and yourself, like the whole issue of a currency that is outside of the control of the United States and Europe and Canada. This is a major breakthrough, a major project that is going on right as we speak. That's why I have to mention BRICS once again, that is burgeoning. And the main feature of BRICS, it has already started, and that is using currencies that are not American currency, even using credit cards that are not American credit cards. And this, I think, poses a very important danger to U.S. hegemony. And this, I would also say, amongst what the United States says are their closest allies in this latest provocation in the South China Sea, such as Japan and South Korea. Well, I saw millions of people demonstrating in South Korea against this type of militarization, and perhaps other countries as well. So the United States will not have it that easy, or not as easy, they think, to keep this coalition going against China, as they are, to a certain extent, much less extent, not able to really solidify all of the European countries behind the American pressures against NATO, if not the governments. Millions of people are demonstrating throughout Europe to get Europe out of NATO and stop American NATO arming of the Nazi regime in Ukraine. So there's a lot of things in play. Many things could come up in the next while. I will not be surprised if the United States may have some problem keeping control over South Korea and Japan.
Well, there's got to be something that needs to happen, because we're looking at how North Korea has conducted all these missile tests. Mike Billington, at this point, do you think that the U.S. and its allies there are going to just have a wait-and-see type approach, or are they going to actually... I mean, what is the... it's confusing what strategy the U.S. is really using when it comes to North Korea. I mean, you had Jake Sullivan say that, well, the North Korean nuclear test would be a flagrant violation, were it to happen, of multiple U.S. Security Council resolutions. I mean, is that the best that the U.S. can do when it comes to North Korea?
I don't think anyone in the Biden government has any actual plan that has some positive
Okay, it looks like we may have lost. I'll ask that question from you. I'm sorry we just lost you there, Mark Middleton, if you have us. Arnold August, same question to you in less than a minute, please.
I don't think the Biden administration has any plans at all with regard to that area of the world, aside from the long-term goal to destabilize China and eventually try to control it. So I don't think they have a plan, but they are forced to have a plan now because the Koreans were courageous enough to respond to those drills right around their territory by firing their nuclear weapons as a warning, saying, look, you are not entering Korea, we are ready to defend ourselves. The United States always has been their mentality that the other countries in the South eventually will bow down and ally with the United States, but that is not going to happen with Korea, and it might not even happen in North Korea, it might not even happen with what they call are their allies in the South China Sea.
Thank you for that. Arnold August, author and journalist from Montreal. Mike Billington, thank you. Asia editor of the Executive Intelligence Review from Hamilton, Virginia. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Ikobe Tapwe and the team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Back to Reality. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Asma, your host, here with. I have two very dear guests, Sister Bita and Brother Abu Zahra.
Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi.
Wa alaikum salam. Both of you, welcome to your program. And it's a pleasure to have you in here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
Assalamu alaikum. It's nice to be here again. I'm a Hausa student right at the moment. I'm in my ninth year. And before this, I was in life sciences. So I've got a taster of quite a few things, alhamdulillah.
Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum, and I'm really honored to be here at this episode. My name is Bita, and I'm a medical student. And
we're happy to have you both.
Thank you.
Many people go to other countries in order to pursue their life and their goals and dreams. sometimes it is a tough thing to get accustomed to a new environment, which is actually most importantly, not having the same religion as yours. So as a Muslim woman, as a Muslim man, when I go to another country, specifically if I have kids, then the situation is going to be very hard. Now, what do you think?
First of all, I want to tell you that when you accept a religion, a religion is a whole